Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. We're live tonight. This is May the 16th in the year 2014. And the year just keeps clicking away on us again.
You almost said a different year, didn't you?
I almost did. I forgot what year it is because it's going so fast. But anyway, tonight we have Julia back. She's been over across the pond. She's been in England. You've gone up. Well, I came back last month, and you've been over there.
I was just there 2 weeks longer than you.
I thought it was 3 weeks.
No. I just stayed over a couple of weeks. I know.
Longer.
It seemed like forever.
It did. I had to do the show by myself, sitting here staring at the wall. But we had some nice callers that came in anyway. But Julia's back now. So tonight, we're just kind of doing open mic because there's a lot of different things we can talk about, but I don't know. We'll just see what comes up.
We do our best work at those times.
Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, we let them take over.
Them. So if anybody has any questions for me... At the conference last year, we had some emails afterwards that said they wished that they could have had more time. They all had so many questions they wanted to ask me, and there wasn't time after the lecture. So I'm thinking, well, tonight, if anybody wants to ask any questions about any of my work or any of Julia's work, this is the perfect time to do it.
Well, we're structuring your lecture at the conference this year. We can go ahead and talk about the conference a little bit so that people can do that.
Yeah, well. Because of that, my lecture this year is going to be like an open mic.
Right.
Anything they want to ask me, because they said they had so many questions and never had time. I brought up some pretty deep stuff at the last conference. So I'm going to give out the toll-free number and feel free to just... chime in anytime you want. The toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. And you know, Julia has been over there because we do have an office in England that takes care of Europe and all the everything abroad.
All of the business over there.
Uh-huh. I haven't been to this one because we moved from up around Marlborough down to Glastonbury.
Right.
And I'll be going in July. We're going back over there. We have some things that we're going to be doing. And then I'll get to see it. But you said it's quite beautiful. You can see the tour.
It's got a beautiful view of the tour. Out the window.
Mm. That's why I'm surprised you got something so close.
Oh, we were surprised, too. I mean, it's just something the universe set up for. It said, here it is, because it was just waiting. It's been waiting for years.
It was sitting empty.
Yeah, for years.
Well, I think if some of you have been to England, you know about Glastonbury and what the tour is. But I guess I could just mention what it is in case some of them don't know.
Well, I think it's exciting because... all the Avalon stories and the Lady in the Lake. I mean, actually...
King Arthur.
Actually, where the house is, it's in the lake.
Where the lake used to be?
Yes. Yes, it was in the lake.
Because at one time, those were islands. And, of course, that's where Joseph of Arimathea, whenever he was there with Jesus, that was where he got his pen from. They would come into those islands on their ships and get the tin. And there was the tin miners right there. It's a lot of history in that area. And we were up on the hill where the tour was, and you looked down, and they told us at one time all of that was underwater.
Right.
These hills sticking up weren't there at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And all that was underwater, and it was all drained whenever they made it into farmland. There we got somebody. But the tower is a huge tower that sits on top of one of those hills.
And so, well, the hill, it looks unnatural. It's so much taller than everything else there. I think it may have been a man-made hill.
That's been speculated.
Yeah, because, I mean, well, it's different from all the other hills there. It's just totally different.
But anyway, it's a fascinating, magical area.
Mm-hmm.
It's steeped in history, and that's where, and also the crop circle country.
Well, the crop circles are just over a little bit, but it's definitely in the area.
And that's where we got our office in England. Okay, somebody's there. We got a caller. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, is it Dolores and Julia? How are you guys doing?
Very good. How are you?
We're doing pretty good. My name is Patty. I'm here in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, since it's open mic, I just wanted to ask and see what your opinion is. I've seen on and off on TV and other resources that a lot of so-called people that has been abducted and so forth, that it's always not necessarily from the ETs, extraterrestrials. It could be our own people on this own planet. And I was just wondering, what do you think about that, or what is your take on that? I mean,
can I ask a question first? You said you're seeing it on TV. Where are you seeing this on TV?
Oh, on various channels, actually. On I can't remember. I'm not sure if it's the History Channel or one of those channels. I'm not sure, but
okay. So like on a documentary, Okay. I just want to know
I know that you talk a lot about most of the ETs are here to help us and to help humanity and to help the environment raise the vibrations and so forth. And I do agree with you with that. I do believe that. But at the same time, I was wondering if, and I know that I think you mentioned in your books that there wasn't really anything of ETs that you encountered, that anything negative, that the council really pretty much takes care of that, but to some point, I guess some of them wish they could. But then, of course, you know, we hear things, you know, in the media, like for an example of some ETs that that there's underground bases, that one guy, they cut off his fingers, and he even fought with some of the ETs underground, and there's a hall of hall of horror or something like that. I'm not sure what they call it, but all kinds of things. So I'm thinking to myself, well, I don't want to, you know, pinpoint to any one individual or even agency, for that matter, because I really don't know. But I've just heard also that possibly that it's our own people here on this planet, that they have advanced technology and doing things, and they're just, and some of them are putting the blame on the ETs for what they're doing.
It sounds like to me that it is humans. It's not them.
Yeah, they wouldn't do cut off things.
They wouldn't do that. Yeah. They wouldn't have any reason to.
I think the military does some things, and that gets blamed on ETs.
Yeah, because we found that out. You know, I've been in this field for, 27 years in the UFO field, and I found that the government does a very good job of spreading disinformation and misinformation. They like to plant things that aren't true, just to scare people. You know, it really works well if you can get fear going and get stirred up, and people buy into that. We're so used to the movies and the TV and all the horror stuff that they will buy into it. But for some reason, they want to create the impression that there is something evil and bad about them.
Well, of course, but part of it, I mean, it's either they're spreading misinformation, or sometimes it's the military actually doing things, or the government actually is doing something themselves, and then they're spreading that it's ETs doing it.
Yeah, I have people who have emailed me and said, have I ever heard of military abduction, to where the military will take someone and take them in underground bases? And I've heard of that, but that it's definitely not the ETs.
No.
That's something else. And I've heard all kinds of stories like that. If you have a lot of information about ETs and things, that's what they want to take those people.
Have you heard? Other entities, other people from our own planet, then having advanced technology? I mean, other people reported to you having advanced technology like some of the ETs, and it's just our own people doing all kinds of things, including the mutilations, cattle mutilations, and things of that nature.
Well, I'm feeling like you're taking things from a lot of different places here and kind of putting them together. But, I mean, it is known that there are people underground, that there are, you know, that from a long
time
ago. There's cities under there. So they are, I guess, what would you call them? Are they humans from long ago that are there?
After the Atlantis was destroyed, many of them went underground. And there's a whole cities under there, and there is a many sun. That the ETs put that down there so they would have light, and it's just like being on the surface.
But as far as with those people, I'm wondering, would those people ever come to the surface, take people?
They wouldn't have any reason to. What I've found out is they try to stay away from humans. They don't like humans.
Or
they like their own.
Maybe we should call them surface humans and underground humans.
Yeah, because they said we are so far below them. Their technology in these underground cities is way beyond anything we could accomplish now, because they've not had wars and things to distract them. They were able to get further in technology.
But as far as why...
Well, yeah, that's interesting.
Right.
I saw that in one of your books, Dolores. I appreciate all your information. I mean, that's kind of mind-boggling, I think, for most people, that there can actually be survivors from Atlantis or from wherever, living underground. But and then you got to think about, do they not travel? I mean, how big could it be underneath there? And
huge.
This is about oxygen. And
well, the thing is, I mean, that's what they say, it's huge. But everything we've been told, and I mean, even our scientists and geologists would probably fight to their death to say, wait a minute, we know what the Earth is made of, because they show us all the time. It's all these layers going down here, but,
been told that's not true.
Right.
And they haven't really drilled far enough to find out. But what I have been told is that the entrances to these cities are underneath the pyramids all over the world, because the entrances were put in first, and then the pyramids were put on top of the entrance. And, there's whole cities down there, and they have ways to transportation. They said 3,000 miles an hour.
Right, and she was saying something about, like, how did they get oxygen down there. That's pretty technical, but
it's natural.
Well, because they have plants.
They have plants,
they have
trees.
So they have, so that would create the oxygen.
They have water.
Do they ever come
everything.
Out? Do they ever come out to the open? I mean, if they're survivors, I was wondering if you had that information. I don't know if it's in your books, but I wonder how big can it be? Wouldn't they get bored if it's not that?
It'd be like us being here. It'd be like us being here. I mean, you have everything you need, and a lot of people just stay in their city or they stay in their area. They probably, or like, how they have those shows where people are in domed cities and everything. They probably just stay there, but she's wondering if they ever come out.
They said they really don't like to.
And then just how big is it? Because
it's huge. It's all underneath the world, the whole entire world underneath.
The center,
It's not just in the center. The center is really magma. It's what the scientists have discovered.
So it's in between there, then.
This is the layers in between. I can't remember how many miles down they said it was. But here in Arkansas, even, I had we're very isolated, but I had a man call me one time and said he was retired from the, what would it be, geology department of the government, and or the engineering, and he said they were drilling, and they drilled tunnels in this whole area, and there's always been reports of a lot of sounds underground, like something's going on down there. Well, they said they were drilling tunnels, and they broke through into something that they knew they didn't make. The walls, it was a different tunnel system, and the walls were like, so smooth, they were like glass. And they said it only could have been done by something like a laser beam that made those tunnels. And they found them in here. But they said they got out of there pretty quick, but they had no idea who made them and where it came from. So there's a lot of those. People just don't know they're there, and they lead into the city system. But yeah, it has animals. It even has dinosaurs. Animals and trees and plants and water. And this many sun that was put there by the ETs so they would have light and energy. And I don't think they don't get sick because they've conquered all of that.
So wouldn't they want to ever come out? I mean, if they're so advanced, or at least they sound like they're advanced, wouldn't they want to, I guess, travel into between dimensions? Or maybe they can just leave from right where they're at.
Yeah, if you're doing dimensions, you wouldn't have to come into the surface to do that. They could do it right from where they are. She's just wondering if they...
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
they never
want to
go anywhere.
And I think if you were comfortable, you would have no reason to come to the surface where all the savages are,
right. Yeah.
The violent people. You probably heard the stories, too, about Admiral Byrd, whenever he was exploring the North Pole, and he stumbled across an entrance into the planet. And he said he went down there and he saw cities and dinosaurs. But afterwards, they did everything they could to try to make people think he was crazy and to discredit him. Well, that was back a long time ago when he did that. And he never was given credit for what he found.
I would think there'd be like certain people in our surface world have some kind of contact with him underneath and maybe travel there, and only certain people are allowed to know. I mean, I don't know.
Well, they probably do. You know, they probably are.
But they wouldn't want to spread it. They wouldn't want to show them where the entrances were.
No, and they're not going to make... I mean, I'm sure there are some, and I'm sure the right people know of them.
But they're not going to invite us down there because they know... surface humans are too violent. But there's a whole lot about the world that people don't know. But going back to your original question, I probably think what you're talking about, those kind of abductions are being done by humans.
Are you kind of breaking up, Dolores? You said those abductions are by humans, you said?
Well, going back to your original question that you said, some of them are probably being done by humans, maybe mostly military, I would think.
Yeah, fear tactics, that's government. I mean, you know, the government of somebody is notorious for fear. That's how they operate, is fear tactics. So if there's something trying to scare you, then it's fear. That's what keeps coming to me, is this, it's right, it's our own people. Because I just can't imagine. I mean, we're the only ones that would do that kind of stuff. Humans do that to humans.
Yeah.
Right. And Dolores and Julie, I'm also pretty surprised at how you're a little bit open about it, because from my understanding, from what I read, as an example, what I'm trying to get at is you probably heard of the great psychic who, Pat Price, which a number of years ago he was mysteriously died in Las Vegas after drinking a cup of coffee. And he was a person that he did a lot of remote viewing, and he was really extremely good at it. And he supposedly he remote viewed 4 bases here in the world that is operated by, you know, ETs. And it's like, you know, there's a lot of people. It's like sometimes people have to be careful in what they try to investigate or what they find out, and if they do know, investigate it, not to really spread it around, because otherwise they can be up for a target. They can be targeted.
Oh, yeah. I heard that the whole time I've been working in this field. They all say, well, how can you do this? Aren't you worried about the government coming after you? But I don't worry about it. I just go ahead and do my thing. But I know there are bases underground that are ET bases, and they have bases under the waters, and there's been lots of sightings of ships going in and out of lakes and the ocean, so they definitely have bases under the water and their bases underground, but that's them. But also the government has bases under mountains, certain kinds of mountains There was one, I can't remember where it is now, it was in my Nostradamus book that was talking about the government has a whole city that they put there for the evacuation of Washington if it would ever become necessary, where all the government people could go and it would be just taken care of. And they have everything in place.
Where is that located at?
Public knowledge.
Yeah, it was in Colorado. They said there was one. Mm-hmm. There must be several others, but those were for the evacuation of Washington, and everything was set up so they could run a government from underground. There's a lot of things people don't know about.
Yeah, but I just try to
learn a little bit here and there what I hear, but I'm not the type of person that I would go out and spread the word or you know, do something crazy to get people in the government or hire to get them wheels turned or anything like that, because I think in the long run it's not worth it. I think that if you can just be yourself and just kind of spread positive vibrations through meditation or by whatever means, at least you're doing something to help the planet.
Absolutely, Patty, and that's how, you know, we just don't go to the fear, and that's what you're saying there. I mean, you don't buy into it. I mean, because who knows how much of anything is real, because people that, you know, remember, there is no such thing as fear, and this planet, that's what it's notorious for, is building fear. So that's the biggest lesson and challenge that we have when we come here, is to learn how to operate here without buying into all the fear. It's actually, in the first part of that is recognizing.
Yeah, how
the fear.
To distinguish,
mm-hmm.
and but you don't need it. They
said
spirit is an illusion. Fear is for entertainment purposes only.
Right, and it comes in so many disguises, so many.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But I think that also, Jill, when you're saying about don't buy into the fear or anything, that's really good because you're having more of a positive protection around you. But also,
absolutely.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I also like in Dolores, when you talked about your books, is that you really, you know, like you said, you got a special protection, which is great. And I think that
mm-hmm.
many people
uh-huh.
that works in this field or anything like that is going to need or need all different types of protection that you can possibly think of. Because protection, it minimizes a lot of the fear.
Yeah, right, but the thing is, there's nothing to be protected from. See, so see that's where when you can say you got to be protected, that's implying that there's something to be protected from. There's nothing to be protected from because everything is fine. And see, you create. So if you're going to think, oh, I got to be protected, then you're going to attract to you things to be protected from.
Well,
so,
you always draw to you the one thing you're afraid of, you will draw
that's
to
what I'm
you.
Saying.
You give it energy.
Right. And so but if you come from, what they're trying to tell me is it's your frequency. If you will, you carry the frequency with no fear and all that, when you're on that frequency, then these other things can't come to you because they're not of that frequency. See, it's like
doesn't
frequencies.
Resonate.
Exactly. Like frequencies attract. And they're on two totally different levels, so it can't happen.
It doesn't resonate.
Mm-hmm. Right, and as long as...
Right.
And so if you're in a fear mode, then you're going to attract and all the things that are fear modish.
You're making it
right.
Worse.
Hey, if it works.
Okay. Well, I always tell people in my lectures anyway, when you hear all these things, ask lots and lots of questions.
Right.
Don't believe what anybody says. Don't believe what I say. Make up your own mind and ask lots of questions. And if it doesn't sound right, well, then don't buy into it.
Yeah, see what resonates for you. And it may very well be that that's truth for you. And that's fine because it's your level of experience that you want to have at this point. I've had my fear stuff, and I'm done with it. And I just don't choose to have it anymore. So that's where
Right. I mean, I believe it too, that whatever, and I've heard of that, you probably, and I know, Dolores, I think you mentioned in books, you've been to the Edgar Cayce there at the ARE in Virginia
mm-hmm.
Beach, and that, and in part of his readings that Mr. Cayce said is that what you fear, I cannot remember the exact terminology that he used, but it's something that if you believe it, if you attract fear, then what you fear is going to happen in your life or something, you attract that in the... put that vibrations in your life for
absolutely
for fearing that.
Because Remember, you are a creator. You create everything that's in your life. You're a great and powerful being. So they are always saying, why not just create good and love? You don't need that other. You can create it because you have the power. But
right. I mean, because nothing here is real. Anyway, it's all your creation. So create what you want. I mean, we create the fear stuff because we didn't know any better. Well, now you know better. So it's on you if you want to still create that kind of stuff.
Right, yeah.
Well, we're learning because now things are changing. The veil is thinning. Everything is changing. So it's time we're all waking up anyway.
Right. Okay. Well, I thank you for your input, and I'm just going to probably hang up right now and just put you back on speaker here over here.
No problem. Well, thank you for your question, Patty. That was great.
It was a good question. All right. Yeah.
Well, thank you, too, for being here every week, or almost every week.
Okay. Except when we're all traveling.
Okay. Thank you, Patty.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Because I never know if I've covered these things. We probably have, but I don't remember if we have or not. So anybody wants to bring up something,
right,
it's perfectly okay. But, yeah, we were talking about the tour there in Glastonbury. And it is a tower. It sits up on top of that mountain,
mm-hmm,
a hill. But, you know, I've heard that before, that hill, it doesn't seem natural that it could be man-made.
No, it's very different from all the other hills there. I mean, it's a lot higher. And that right there is something odd, because the rest of the range is pretty, they're all about the same. And then this one just stands up way above it.
They put that tower up on top, mm-hmm, of it then. But that is the King Arthur territory, Camelot, and the Lady of the Lake, those legends, and that's where it all came from, in that area.
Right.
So who's to say what's real or not? There's so many legends in England, but that's that area. So it's a beautiful area.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's very gorgeous there.
And because I know it's crop circle country, too.
Well, not right there. Over, this is Somerset County. The crop circle area is mostly in Wiltshire County.
Mm-hmm. Well, around Avebury, they've seen them there.
Yeah, that's behind Stonehenge.
Silbury Hill.
Then that's just like
a little ways over.
It's just a little east of where Glastonbury is.
But with Glastonbury, it's a lot of magic there because it's so old. When you go there, the whole town seems to resonate old, and you can feel there was magic. Because the wizards, well, there would have been Merlin the wizard at the time of King Arthur.
Well, then now, because of that, you know, it's a tourist place, a tourist city, and then they brought, it's all this metaphysical. I mean, it's a perfect place for us, for the publishing company. So, because anyway, they've got, it's very commercial as far as, you know, crystals and readers, and it's a very metaphysical place.
Mm-hmm.
Commercially metaphysical.
Okay. But yeah, they did, before they drained the lakes, that's where Jesus and Joseph of Arimathea, he would bring his ships in there to get the tin, because he was a tin miner. You know, he sold tin all over the world. He was one of the richest men in the world at that time. Tin was like gold, because they could use it to make bronze, which was a very valuable metal in those days. So he used to hide, because he had ships that would follow him, trying to see where was he getting his tin. And that's how important it was. So they had ways of sneaking in through those channels to get into those islands. Those were the tin islands all around that area. So you said where our office is, used to be at the bottom of one of the
lakes. Well, I think just looking at it in relation to the hill with the tour, I think it's either an island or it's the lake. It's hard to say.
Well, in some of my books I'm writing, you know, I've got a whole lot of more books that I've got material that goes way, way back, that I've had for 30 years or more that I haven't ever written about, and going back to those. And in one of those, it talks about, I would say it would be the Druids, but the Druids were the women. And they were not bad. You know, they've gotten a terrible reputation. The church wanted everybody to think that the Druids were awful people. But the women Druids would meet. Their goddess was the Lady of the Lake. That's why I think that legend is real. I'm still doing research on it because I'm going to eventually put this in a book. But they had an island out there that they would go and have their gatherings. And see, they had to be careful because the church, everybody trying to kill all these people. And they would follow them if they get a bunch of them together, and they could kill them. So what they did was they would go to this one island they said was their sacred island, and they could gather there. But the only time they could go there was during certain times of the moon, because otherwise it would all be water around there, and you couldn't walk out to it. But at certain times of the moon, I guess because of the tide, there would be like a land bridge that would connect over to the island. And then once they got over there, well, then the water would come back in and nobody could find them. And they could do their sacred ceremonies.
Cool.
So, and I've gotten that through two or three different people about that. And so I think that's probably, they kept saying Our Lady is the one that they, I don't want to say worship. And I wanted to know, was it a real person, a teacher, or a leader? And they said they couldn't see her. But that's why I think it all goes along with the legend of the Lady of the Lake, where it all came from.
Well, I think it's funny now. I'm visualizing when I'm, you know, driving around and everything. And when you say that, I can almost see what may have been the land bridge.
The land bridge.
Uh-huh. And then thinking about when you're driving, I mean, we'd be at the bottom. It would have to have been the bottom of the lake.
It has
so,
to be.
And that's just funny thinking about that. So that would have been all lake.
Because that way, if somebody was trying to follow them, and, you know, they would always be doing their practices in secret. Somebody was trying to follow them, they'd go out and go out there, and they'd always do it at night. Go across the land bridge at night. Nobody would know where they were going. They wouldn't be able to find them.
Well, it'd be interesting if where the office is that island. I just know when people come there. I mean, it's got such a beautiful, peaceful energy in this building where we are.
Even though it's a new building.
It's 10 years old.
That's new.
It's very new over there. Yeah, it looks American. That's what I like about it. It's not an old building, though.
Oh, because you go into some of those towns. Canterbury is another one that is just so old. And
they have so much stuff in their history.
Oh, and you can feel it coming out of the walls. It's just ancient. What's the other one? Norwich.
Yeah.
That you can feel all the history. Because we were in a restaurant there that goes back to the days of the monks. What was it, 400 or something?
Right.
It was quite back that far, but they're old. And it's a funny feeling. I told them while you were gone about us going to the concert we had over there, and then whenever we did our talk, it was in this old church.
Right. Yeah, you know those walls can talk.
Oh, yeah. What they would say, because you can just feel it's just ancient coming out of... We don't have anything like that in America. America, what, it's only 1700s, 1600s at the oldest of anything could possibly be in America, and it wouldn't have these big cathedrals like that. But there, they just go way, way back, so they're steeped in history. But I've got a lot of that because I love history. And when I get these sessions, a lot of times I'll hang on to them until I get more information. The one book I'm going to be writing deals with all of these things. So it's not quite convoluted universe material, but it is interesting material.
Is that the secret knowledge?
Some of it is in there, but some of it is going in other books that I'm working on. They're just too much to put it into
one. Well, I know people want to know what's in these books that are coming out.
And they're always
trying to lead in. I'm trying to help you guys out there. She's going to evade this as much as possible.
Well, yeah, because everybody's always saying, well, when's your next book coming out? And what's it going to be about? Well, everybody's always thinking it's going to be the next convoluted book. Well, those convoluted books take years of accumulating information, because it has to come from the people I work with, from my clients, and I gotta wait till I get enough that's different and unusual to make up a book. I've got over half of the next convoluted one is coming together, convoluted five, and it has some new strange information in it. But I'm still getting information for that, so that's not the next one. Everybody says, when's convoluted five? The next one is the one that's going to be coming out now is called
The Search for Sacred Knowledge. We shortened the title a little bit.
Oh, I thought just the Nancy said she thought it was The Search for Hidden Sacred
Knowledge. It was, but we've taken hidden out because it's like you're searching. Anyway, there was a council that decided that was a hard-to-remember name, and so they came up with Search for Sacred Knowledge.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to be about then.
Right, uh-huh.
But I get so much information, and when I try to put it all into a convoluted book, it becomes too much. That's what happened. It was supposed to be part of convoluted four, and it turned in now it's a book by itself. Besides, it kind of needs to be away from the convoluted books are different. They always have a twist and a turn in there when you're going into past lives.
Hence the title convoluted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You never know where it's going to lead, and I just go along asking questions because I never know what my clients are going to say, and they always surprise me. But this was material that I've accumulated for many, many years now, all dealing with sacred knowledge and lost knowledge and hidden knowledge. And so I've been putting it together, and it's now going to be in a book by itself. But as far as what it deals with, it goes back really to the beginning, you know, when the ETs, you know, whenever after we were created and we were all forming civilizations and beginning to be somewhat human, the ETs came and lived among us so they could teach us. Because every culture in the world has the legend of the culture bringer. Nobody just all of a sudden decides I'm going to go out of the jungle and start building a house or start fire or start planting seeds. It doesn't happen that way. Somebody has to teach them. So this is where the legend of the culture bringers came from. Every culture in the world has it. The Indians have their corn woman, who came and taught them how to plant corn. And all of the cultures have that. They teach them how to hunt. The basic things that a civilization needs.
Right, the next step that they need.
Yeah. And they're not going to teach them computer science if they just got to learn how to plant food and how to build houses. That'd be the first basic thing.
Well, when you think about the needs hierarchy, first need is survival. So they had to teach them how to survive.
Yeah. So they came and lived among them. And in all the legends all over the world, the culture bringer always comes from the sky or from across the sea. And so it's always the same thing. Well, what I found out that these were ETs, this was their assignment. They had to live among these people, the developing civilization, to give them the basic knowledge. So that's when I start the book out as some of the things I've got when they were living among them. And they were beginning to give them the basic knowledge. And in fact, one of the chapters is they think we are gods. But because they could do all these things that the average person couldn't do, they were worshipped. And this is where your legends came from. Because they didn't die until they wanted to die. They stayed as long as they could. So they just went on for generations and generations. But then it came to the point they knew they weren't going to be able to stay here forever. You just start the civilization out, give it its basics, and then you hope they're going to do it, or use it in the right way. Then they have to leave. So before they would leave, they would pick certain people who they thought were advanced enough that they could teach them. And they passed on a lot of the knowledge to them. And they interbred with some of these people so they could have some of the same abilities that the ETs had for psychic abilities and all of those things. So it shows how in those different stories, you come from all these different people of the steps that it went through when they were living among us, the ETs, and then the first ones that they interbred with had abilities. And, of course, it didn't go over so well. And so it's interesting stories of that, especially in the part where they think we are gods. And they said, we're not gods. It's just the alien blood is all it is that makes us appear different. But they didn't want to be worshipped.
Well, and then they also live much longer.
Yeah. But a lot of them didn't get sick or anything, so they'd already conquered a lot of that. But as the generations went on, that blood began to be more and more diluted to where a lot of the abilities were not being passed down. So this book kind of follows that trend. Then it takes it up into later, whenever people in later days have any of these kind of abilities, then they were thought they were witches, then they'd kill them. Shows how everything changed. But it's over a span of a long time. It just got all these sessions, and I tried to put them in some kind of a chronological order is the way the events must have happened. So it's hard to say what it's about, except showing that the knowledge has always been there.
It's been there. Like you said, it's not showing you how to get it or how to bring it forward. It's just showing you that
where it came from.
And then something else you've always said is, if you know that that's been there, I mean, which is a possibility for every one of us, then you can also retrieve that if it's appropriate, if you want it.
Some people are wanting it. A lot of my clients want to, because they feel they used to be able to do things and now they can't. A lot of them remember being able to do things when they were little kids. But then, you know, the adults would say, well, no, you can't do that. Stop talking like that. People think you're crazy.
Stop levitating. Stop.
I was going to say that because a lot of them that I've written about already, they said the kid, when they were kids, they remembered being able to levitate. And one said he could fly.
What's that, Johnny? Stay on the ground.
Well, one said he knew he could fly until he was being told enough times, you can't do that. And they said, I almost said back. But I don't know how that would go now if all of a sudden they started flying around the room.
Well, it would be scary at first, but then all of a sudden, first they'd be going, wait a minute, that's impossible. And then once they start seeing it, then it's possible. And then you probably start seeing more people doing it, because now it's a possibility. Right now it's an impossibility. So that's why we can't do it.
But a lot of my clients said they remember doing all kinds of strange things when they were very young. But it's always the adults that stifle it, push it down. Because in one of my books I've already got out there, I think it's in one of the convoluted books, that talks about this kid, remembered as a baby, being able to make things levitate around the room. The knives and forks and everything floating through the air and all this weird stuff. And they lived out in the country. Well, the parents had no idea what was going on. And they used to put the baby in the oven. The oven is not lit, but they put her in the oven to hide her because it scared her what she was able to do. So naturally, they're going to shut it down. And then when she got older, they would hide her in the closet and said, you can come out whenever you stop being bad and doing those things. Well, then naturally they're going to turn off those abilities.
Well, sure, because, I mean, they're afraid. They're thinking, I mean, that's, as we've been taught, that's evil.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and but what are they going to do with this child? That's my child that I love, but it's evil.
Look at what he's doing.
Can't let people know they're evil.
But then for the kid, it becomes survival. I've got to adjust to the outside world, or I'm not normal, and it'll put me in the closet, and they get to where they're afraid to let anybody know what they can do. So a lot of them now said, I know I can do these things. I want to get those abilities back. And after all my sessions, they're told, you don't have to worry about it. Nobody's going to burn you at the stake anymore. And so it's perfectly okay to experiment with these things, but that's our normal birthright.
Right.
And, you know, I think a lot of my books, I've already explored this, and I think it goes into it in this new book, that when Atlantis, we had at least 3 or 4 different civilizations that got to the height of what they could do with their minds. They could do anything with their minds. Nothing was impossible. Then they overdid it. They misused the power. So that's when it has to be taken away. And when that happens, they said it's like blowing a fuse. And it takes it away, and it'll be many, many generations before it'll begin to slowly come back. So they said, this is what happened with Atlantis and all those places, those civilizations. So they said, now we were reaching the same point, but they don't want to destroy the civilization again. Because they'll have to destroy the civilization if we get to the point that we're going to blow up our world. Then they have to step in and do something. But they said they don't want to start over again. There's not enough time anymore. Because once they destroy a civilization, it goes back to the primitive stages of survivors. And they start all over again. If you can imagine what that would be like, having crystal cities and being never dying until you wanted to die, no sickness, being able to do anything with crystals, anything, any kind of ability. Then all of a sudden it's all taken away, and here you are with nothing. You start out having to figure out from the very basics. So naturally that's going to take thousands of years to get back up to that point. That's what they said. They have to. It's like blowing the fuse. You got to take it away. So this is some of these stories in this book about how the knowledge is there and it's coming back now.
Okay, and what I'm being told, so if I can, because people are like, okay, they can't all get to you to get a session, or they can't get to a practitioner to get a session to access this information. So I'm being told, it's just like everything else, you just tap into it. So you can tap into your own reservoir, and that's how they're showing it. It's like a reservoir, or think of yourself like drilling a well. You can just tap into this channel of this information. It's there. It's like a river. I'm just seeing it flowing and everything. So all you have to do is tap into it, and you can get your own what's right for you, access to this, all of these abilities, this information, whatever you want.
And now is the time to
absolutely
bring it back.
Yeah, it could have been done before, but now you can just, well, I mean, it could have been done, but we didn't know we could do it. So now we know enough, and then that's why they're telling me to tell you, all you have to do is tap into it, and you can have whatever you want. Ooh, that's cool. That's what I said, whatever you want. So, there you go.
That's what I was just telling one of my clients this week. You can have anything you want. They keep saying that. Nothing is impossible.
Mm-hmm.
There are no limitations at all. That's what we got to realize. We have those abilities. It's our right.
Well, and even let's not take it to it, because some people, that's maybe rough, that's hard to, okay, abilities, but let's not even segregate it out to abilities, just anything. You know, we put so many limitations on ourselves. We cut off ourselves from all of our possibilities and potentials, Because, for whatever reason, mostly because we've been...
Programmed.
It'd be like the elephant with the chain around its foot, you know, from birth, and it doesn't think it can... It doesn't realize it has all the power to pull that stake up, you know. We've been trained as, no, this is all you can do. You only have this many things that you, that are at your disposal. And anything is that, it's just a matter of you choosing to do it. You're like, well, I don't have the money. Yeah, but you know what? If you start choosing that you want to do whatever and you believe it and you set out for it, and don't accept that there's not a possibility. You accept that it could happen and there is a possibility. Then you just watch the things start lining up. And your circumstances will change so that you can do it, but you have to line yourself up for that. Absolutely. And all it's a vibrational thing. It's a, that's what we were talking about at the beginning with Patty's question. It's a vibration. It's just a matter of you put yourself into that flow, and that brings to you all the things that are on that level. You're no longer in the level of, no, that can't happen. You're on the level of, yes, it can happen, and you'll get all kinds of proof as to why it can happen. But if you want to stay in the river of, no, it can't, then you'll have all the evidence of why it can't happen.
It goes along with even the physical illnesses. Well, doctors say I'm sick, so, I, you know,
right.
There's no hope for me. They're going to do surgery, but it's you. I always say, what do you think?
And that's what I feel, that's the basis of the whole thing, is us and our own limited beliefs and limited views of the possibilities and potentials, because it's all available to us. And that, oh my, oh, I can't even, I, oh boy, the download I just got.
what'd they say?
Oh, that was a head rush.
What was it?
I don't know, it was just visions, it was just, it was like, this is really important. This is what people, you've got to know your possibilities. You've got to know that anything is possible, so that anything is your potential. That goes back, we have, you know, it's that we are great and powerful beings. We just forgot. See, all that stuff, you've got to understand. This is the time to understand who you are. It's so important.
Because everything is changing right now.
But this is how, I don't know if any of you can feel this, this love is coming through now. They're like, this is the greatest gift that we can give you. This is what everybody needs to know. This is the greatest gift you can give anybody, is to, for them to understand that they can do anything. If you want it, go get it. Go do it. Go be it. You can do anything. No is never, that's not the option. You can do anything. If that's what you want to do, then go do it. You just have to get your frequency there and resonate on with the possibility of it.
And that's what I tell you, you create your reality.
Absolutely.
And if things are not going right in your life, change it. Uncreate it.
And
we don't mean go out and rob a bank or something, no.
No, it's just you shift your thoughts.
Your mindset.
You have to shift. That brain up there is what controls everything. Your thoughts control everything. So you have to monitor your thoughts. You have to keep the thoughts in there that create the possibilities, that vibrate on the frequency of possibilities of this could happen, rather than, oh, no, what if, wait, we're notorious for, well, what if this happens? What if this happens? What if this happens?
What if I fail?
What if I, well, what if you succeed? What if it goes right? What if, I mean, let's look at those possibilities. We're not taught to do that.
No, my mother and father weren't raised this way, so I can't be any better than they are.
Mm-hmm. We have all kinds of limiting beliefs that we are, that are shoved down our throats. It's like, enough. This is where we, oh gosh, they're really on it. This is where we take our power back. This is how, we always saying step into your power. They're like, take it back. Take the power back.
We've always had it, but then, well, church is one thing that has taken a lot of it away.
Exactly. But that's, they don't have the power anymore unless we give it to them. Nobody has the power unless you give it to them.
Mm-hmm.
Take your power back. Know who you are. We, oh my goodness, we don't have an inkling of what we can do. And I know we're coming close to the shore, so I think that's what we need to follow up on next week, because this is really, really important. I mean, the stuff that they're just downloading is tremendous.
But now is the time. We're living in the most important time in history,
mm-hmm.
and everything is changing.
And that's exciting.
It is, and to know that you can create. Well, I think I've said in many of my lectures, the greatest lesson you start to learn when you come to Earth is how to learn how to manipulate energy. And people said, well, what do you mean? Everything is energy. Now, what does it mean when you say you have to learn to manipulate energy? That means you have to learn to create. That's what this is all about. And you don't graduate from Earth school until you learn how to create. And everything is possible.
Yeah, but it's a matter of, it's just one thing to say, but it's, and now it's time to really be shown. And that's where this is important to better understand how this is done.
Everything begins with the thought. So first you have to create what it is you want. You have to think, what is it I want to create? Yeah, I know we're at the end here. Yeah, the hardest part is trying to figure out what you want.
We will continue this next week.
Yeah, I think so, because it is important. I've talked about it. We've given seminars on it. But, okay, we're going to have to sign off.
Please tune in to the website so you can see the events coming up. We have the Transformation Conference coming up, and we have a cruise coming up in the Mediterranean in October. So check those out, because these are going to be really, really cool things. Okay, sign off.
Okay, because, yeah. Okay. I'm glad Julia's back. Okay. All right. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in tonight.
Make it great. It's your creation.
Okay. Good night, everybody.